Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins.
And welcome to episode 3 of season 2 of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime Podcast with A.P. Fuchs, who's me. And, you know, so when I did this episode, I kind of recorded it backwards, right? Because when I do these things is I record the story first. Why? Because I'm fresh and I want the story to be read with like a fresh voice instead of a tired voice. So I recorded the story and then recorded some other segments, and now we're recording the intro. And I'm telling all this behind the scenes stuff up front first because when I was reading the story and I was thinking this is going to go on YouTube, I thought, how boring is it just to watch a guy reading from a book? So my suggestion to you is, like, yeah, listen to the words. Listen to, you know, because this is going to be on audio streaming platforms and stuff too, so you get to hear it, and that's different. But if you're the one who's doing the watch listen version, yeah, you know, maybe just go like surf the internet but have YouTube playing in the background, and then that way you don't have to stare at me reading from a book, because that's, yeah, I don't know, what should I do? And I can't do anything about that segment, right? Because if I do, then you're going to get distracted by whatever might be on the screen, and that defeats the point of telling you the story. So it's kind of like one of those rock and hard place situations. So anyway, that's kind of like what I found kind of humorous about that part of the doing this podcast is, or the visual version of this podcast is that aspect. I think it's kind of funny. Anyway, the story you're about to hear, I won't tell you much about it. I'm going to just give you a friendly disclaimer that at first it might come across a bit confusing, but if you tune in and hang in there, it will all come together and make sense in the end. But it's, and then as explained later in the show, when I tell the story behind the story, again, it'll make sense why maybe at first it might not make sense. So I hope that makes sense. Make sense? Sense? Sense, sense, sense? Okay, let's go. 1, 2, 3, story time. Spinning room. It had to work. Sharon was sure of it. She knew what was going to happen. Her heart rate was already quickening. Thunder crashed and lightning flickered in sharp flashes against the deep purple sky beyond the gray marble railing to her left. The lightning's bright flash reflected off the shiny surface of the gigantic marble pillar on her right. If it wasn't for being under such terrible circumstances, she might have stopped and waited for the lightning to bounce off the surface again just so she could say it was beautiful. This place, this room, this round room, a balcony wrapped around a massive pillar like a band around a finger, was as good a place as any to be on All Hallows' Eve. But it wasn't really a room, was it? More like a washer around an amazingly tall cylinder, or a gigantic ring encircling a pillar so far and wide that it dwarfed anything the Greeks or Romans could conjure up. Thunder boomed. The air changed. Human now, feeling thick. Sharon kept her pace. She rounded the corner, hoping she could change things, adjust something, so she and her family wouldn't die, so they'd be fine. Thunder crashed again, sending a shockwave through her chest. Lightning followed this time, and right at the blast of bright white flash was her Aunt Clara, beautiful as always. Aunt Clara stood about midway between the railing and the wall, her white dress, bright but with dark, shadowy folds in the material, blowing in the gentle breeze. Black rings encircled her eyes, complementing her long red hair, the ringlets blowing with what seemed to be a harsher wind. Almost as if the wind blowing her dress blew in opposing directions and speed as the wind that blew against her hair. There was the glint of black metal as Clara raised her hand and aimed a gun at Sharon. Sharon poured on the speed, praying her aunt would be kind enough to let her pass. Sharon ran by her, already changing something. Her aunt's gun remained aimed at her. If Clara fired... almost passed, Sharon thought. Her heart ached from its rapid beating, and she could envision the flakes of cracked, dry skin at the back of her throat. Each panting breath only dried it out even more. She should have drank something before she started the obstacle course again. Thunder boomed. No, not thunder. The bullet blasted its way into Sharon's left shoulder blade, exiting through a neat hole in the middle of her front deltoid. Blood splashed out of her red sweater, the two tones oddly clashing with each other. Fire stung her skin. Her left arm burned, but the sharp pain of the bullet wound burned even more. She kept running, her tears making it difficult to see. No matter how many times she wiped them away, they returned full force. Pressing her other hand against her shoulder to slow her bleeding, her stomach twisted into a knot at the feel of the warm blood spilling from her wound. Her bones ached. Something else was about to happen now. Supposed to happen. At least, she remembered to look to her right this time. On her previous run, she had forgotten and only remembered at the last second, but it had been too late, she having ran past her mother and the man about to end her mom's life. Already watching the wall, she came around the bend, the gray marble abruptly stopping and becoming a tinted window. It was difficult to see through the window, running by as quickly as she was, but she did make out the two figures inside. One was tall and lean, the other shorter and plump. Her mother was in a private room with a man, someone who was not her father or anyone she recognized. "Mom, get out of there," she thought. "The other guy's going to come in." She didn't know how she knew a second man was going to enter the room through a black door, a bar of dim yellow light coming from the room or hall beyond. But he was going to come in wearing red. The tall man. He wore blue. A faint memory crept into the fore of her mind. She wasn't supposed to know the stocky man in the red jumpsuit and hood was going to come in the room. Not supposed to know? Eyes still on the window, tears filled them the moment the tall man grabbed her mother and tore her apart, his long, sharp nails digging into her mother's doughy flesh, ripping her insides open. Blood burst from her mother's belly like water from a balloon. Sharon ran past the window. In spite of the heartache and blazing pain in her shoulder, she forced herself to wipe her eyes and press on. There was another that needed saving. It wasn't long before Sharon's legs filled with fatigue, hot, gooey blobs of tiredness invading her thighs and calves. Her pace slowed. Her biceps ached, and raising her arms was nearly impossible. "He's just around the next turn," she thought. She pressed on toward her father. Already she could envision what was going to happen in her absence. This particular arc of the spinning room seemed extra long for some reason, almost as if the path was straight instead of curved. Readying herself for the smooth marble to end and for the chalky gray of ancient Roman-like pillars to appear, arranged in a waist-high railing, Sharon's lungs screamed, her breathing rapidly increasing. She suddenly forgot what was supposed to happen now, what she was supposed to stop. Before she could slow down to think or even just catch her breath, the thick stone railing supported by miniature Roman-like pillars appeared. Over the railing was a rectangular room, inset into the wall. The wall, like the railing, was a powdery light gray stone. The sound of rippling water came from just below the railing. To her right, her father stood with his back to her, hands raised, the baggy sleeves of his green sweater bunching around his elbows. At an angle across from him, a figure in a black hood and robe held him in the sights of a sleek black rifle. The mysterious figure bore an unsettling resemblance to death. Purple clouds tumbled and twirled above like fluff in a dryer. Thunder rumbled both far off and also near. "Dad!" He didn't seem to hear her. Maybe he wasn't allowed to turn around. Maybe the figure in the black robe would shoot him if he did. White rope. It was more of a sensation than a thought, but the image of a white rope came to the surface of her mind. Glancing to her left, she saw a dark purple stone box pushed up against the outside railing. The box was about a half foot shorter than the railing, but the white coil of rope on its top made its total height a good 6 inches above the railing, if not more. Black handle. Another sensation, another knowing of a kind. Disregarding the consequences of what she was about to do, Sharon ran toward the rope and grabbed the black handle that sat in the coil's middle. It was only when she stood on the railing and looked down did she realize what she was doing. The endless abyss of swirling purple and gray cloud below made her head swim. Lightheaded, certain she was going to faint, Sharon fought to stay coherent. A ways behind her, over her right shoulder, stood her father, hands still in the air. His balding head caught the light of a jagged slash of lightning and then shot through the sky, then just as quickly disappeared. The figure in the black robe, it was closer to him. Okay, here we go, she thought. She did this before, many times. At least, she thought she had. Sharon ran along the railing, away from her father. The rope unraveled a good 15 or 20 feet before it went taut. The moment the rope tugged on its bond to the purple box, Sharon dove off the railing's edge, hoping her grip would hold on the handle. Immediately her body jerked to her right and fell, hot wind blowing her hair back. Reaching the base of her downward arc, she shot upward, her body quickly sailing toward railing level. Still rising upward, she passed the man in the robe and her father, and when the rope hit the pinnacle of its swing, she twisted her body to the right so she was facing them. She leaned over to the left as she descended. Her shoulder ached, but she swallowed the pain and ignored it. While the skill of having done it countless times before, from other runs through the obstacle course that was the spinning room, she pulled on the rope and jolted herself down its length, grabbing the rope where it was still taut. Legs outstretched, she swung in and knocked the cloaked figure to the ground. The shiny black rifle went off on its butt end when it hit the ground. Her father fell, blood spurting from his chest. Aunt Clara aimed the gun at Sharon. Move! Sharon screamed inside and darted past her. The gun went off and Sharon ducked quickly. The bullet grazed her shoulder, tearing up a chunk of the white nightgown she wore. Wait, red sweater, right? She thought. The realization of difference in apparel quickly faded. Come back here, Clara yelled after her. The voice was distant, melodious, and seemed to come from everywhere and somewhere ahead of her instead of behind. Lightning slashed the sky in zigzagging lines. Thunder rolled along the purple and gray clouds. Digging her bare heels into the marble floor, she pressed on, already envisioning the tinted window about to peer to her right. Mom, she said, and ran even harder. Stopping before the window, she found it difficult to breathe as she frantically tried to figure a way in. Banging on the glass with the undersides of her fist, Sharon hoped the sound would distract the man in the blue outfit. Blue, long enough for her mother to get away and not endure whatever he had planned. Watch out for the one in the red, Sharon shouted through the glass. Her mother glanced over at her, smiled sweetly, her aged eyes reading, I know what I'm doing. The short man in the red suit, red, entered the room and joined her friend. Before long, her mother fell from view. A gush of red streamed upward, splashing the window. No! Sharon's cries were quickly silenced by a devastating boom of thunder. Next time, she thought. Next time. She ran. The desire to redeem herself burned a hole through her heart. She saved herself from her aunt, let her mother die. Her father was the only one left. She knew what was going to happen. She just couldn't remember if she knew how it was going to happen and how she could save him. He died last time, right? She thought. She couldn't remember. Memories of efforts to save her parents ending in failure kept her thoughts in a foul mix. Sweat trickled off the baseline of her hair, down her neck, and rode the contours of her back and pooled at the waistband of her jeans. Look out for the man in black. The pace of her thoughts matched that of her stride. And then she saw him. Spikes of lightning zigzagged so close to the smooth marble railing that Sharon was certain the figure's black cloak would burst into flames. He stood near the railing, the clouds crashing, thundering, booming behind him. Now that would be a blessing. I wouldn't have to. The white rope! There, beside the dark figure. She poured on the speed and, a moment later, a sudden flash of gray followed by a rush of black as her face slammed into the marble floor. The sound of impact ran through her head from front to back, then hung above her ears. Hot pain sliced the front of her ankle, then the back, then the front again. She felt like she had just stubbed her toes, too. Drawing her knees to her chest, she slowly got up, her head still bowed and her fingertips bracing her on either side, keeping her balanced. Standing straight up, she winced as she carefully set her left foot down. parting the brown hair that hung over her eyes. She screamed when she saw her father on his knees before the man in the dark cloak. The rifle, now silver, was to her father's head, and with the next bang of thunder, the end of the gun barrel sparked a bright yellow star, the color quickly replaced by a glistening upward spray of deep red. Her left foot was fine. There was no headache or ringing originating from inside. I wish I could see Aunt Clara well before she tries to kill me instead of this stupid gray pillar that hides everything beyond each curve, Sharon thought. The stone pillar that was part of the path she followed was enormous. Its curve was so slight that it felt like you were moving in a straight line when running next to it. What if she was running alongside the railing instead of beside the pillar? What if she ran alongside that? Would it make a difference? She might get a better view of her aunt. Crossing over the reflective gray speckled marble floor, she brought her hands up, already imagining the bang from Aunt Clara's gun. She ran, an impending feeling that she had to get to someone, soon or the worst would happen. Far off, where the railing began curving inward, a flutter of white cloth materialized. "She's waiting for me," Sharon said. "She's waiting, waiting for me." The flowing white material moved rhythmically in an unfelt wind, growing closer. Her thoughts ceased, and her legs brought her nearer to the woman about to kill her. "She's waiting for me." The thought was a welcome noise in a too silent mind. Waiting. Sharon crossed the floor again, back to the pillar. She slowed to a jog, then stopped completely. It might work. This whole repetition of events felt like a game, but Sharon couldn't recall what game she was playing or who she was playing it with. Keeping herself as close to the wall as possible, she slowly stepped forward. Not too far, not too close either. "Wait," she whispered. Stopping, she swallowed the lump in her throat. Moments crept by and her legs grew jittery. "Have to hurry and run. You have to hurry and..." "No, don't do it. Stay put or move slowly, but do not run." The words inside her head carried the firm voice of her mother scolding her when she had done something wrong. The white fabric of her aunt's dress crossed back over to the right. She would be there any moment, gun poised, ready to kill. Sharon crept forward, trying to make her body one with the wall. Aunt Clara's shoulders and hips were clearly visible now, on the other side of the curve far ahead. The rest of her wound would soon follow. "When she's halfway over, before she can see me..." Clara's gorgeous red hair hung halfway down her arm. Only half of it was visible. Sharon ran back across the railing at an angle, keeping as close to it as she could, restraining herself with everything she had from looking over the edge. But she looked anyway, and was lost to the paint-like swirls of purple, indigo, gray, and blue. There was nothing down there yet. There was still everything. Its depth ran for miles, and her body ached to jump over the edge to see where it might lead. About to succumb to its pull, Clara grabbed her. "Bye-bye," she said in a plucky tone. She brought the gun to Sharon's head. "No, it's not supposed to happen like this. I escaped before. If I did it once, I'm supposed to every time, right?" Her head ached with confusion. The instant Clara clocked the gun, Sharon ducked low, grabbed the gun and the arm with it, and pulled her aunt to the railing, slamming her aunt's gut against it. Quickly, Aunt Clara twisted, her back pressed against the railing. Wasting no time, Sharon put her hands above Clara's breasts and pushed quick and hard. Aunt Clara toppled over the edge. Sharon broke her momentum forward, palms to the rail. Clara didn't scream as she fell and disappeared into an inviting pool of moving purple, gray, blue, and... Sharon moved onward. "Okay, get Mom, then Dad right after," Sharon thought. Moving past Aunt Clara took longer than I thought. So much for my plan. She doubted that any other she would have come up with would have worked either. Just run. The metallic taste of stale saliva ran over her tongue. Her lungs hurt, but only at their bottoms, like a sharp stick was being driven into the lower part of her ribcage. Her mother would be coming up on the right any moment now. "Gotta have more time," she said. Her words came out choppy as she ran. It was better to say some of her thoughts out loud than keep them in. It helped keep her head clear. Glancing over her left shoulder, she checked to see if Aunt Clara had somehow found her way back up and was following behind. All she saw was the long, slightly curved wall that was the pillar in the middle of a spinning room. Spinning room. That felt somehow right. This was a spinning room, wasn't it? The path spun around the pillar and a crack of thunder shook the ground. By her right foot, the one closest to the pillar, was a fine black line, a crack of some sort. Despite not wanting to lose time, she forced herself to slow down and eyed the line that separated the pillar from the floor. The blending of the grays of the floor and the wall made it nearly invisible. Placing a palm on the pillar's smooth surface, she slowed her jog to a brisk walk. Heat brewed beneath her palm as she trailed it against the wall. At the speed she was walking, her outstretched arm should have bent at the elbow as her body caught up to it, but it didn't. Her right arm stayed straight even when she picked up her pace. She had to get moving. It took so long to get from one event to another. Bursting into a fast run, she charged towards the glass window, hoping she hadn't wasted too much time while she figured out that the floor was spinning, however slowly, around the pillar like a washer around a screw. How am I going to see Mom? She thought. The glass that separated her and her mother was thick, a plexiglass of some kind. She had nothing to break it with. I'll never get out of here. Unless I save her, she said. Every 10 or so feet, the railing fan ran far to the left and was separated by stone posts, part of the finely detailed railing's design. Upon further inspection, the rail appeared old in parts, worn away and cracked at different connecting points, weathered from years of abuse from the storm that raged ever on around this place. I wonder... Hope filled her as she crossed to the railing, stopping by one of the dividing posts. The shape on the top of it resembled a smooth, bulbous piece of wood that would sit on top of a square block at the end of a banister. Wrapping her hands around the back of the sphere, she pulled with everything she had. It wiggled, but nothing more. Planting first her right foot, then her left against the railing, hands still behind the sphere, she pushed her legs outward, assisting her arms. She grunted, straining to break the top of the post free. Thunder crashed, its sudden sound causing her to jump and apply that much more strain on the post and railing. The railing snapped and her leg shot over the edge. She smacked her tailbone as she hit the ground, her crotch slamming into the post. She yelped and pushed against the post, hoping it wouldn't break, to get the better part of her legs away from the endless nothingness of the cloud-swirling sky. Panting, she lay there, sweaty and tired. She had taken too long. Her mother would be dead by now. So would her father. Sharon, muscles fresh, lungs full of energizing air, tore along the wall, confident she would save her parents this time. Just like before, she lured her aunt over to the wall, ran around her, only having to dodge one shot before taking off toward her mom. This time, knowing the room was spinning around the pillar made her run all the more faster. She kept her eyes peeled for the post she had tried to free last time she underwent this strange challenge. The posts were all alike and all seemed to have a weathered look where the railing joined up with them on either side. To find the same one. And did the posts reset themselves too, each time she had to start over? Things changed here in the spinning room. First her sweater was red, then changed to... What was it again? And the figure in the black cloak's rifle had turned from black to... She couldn't remember, but knew in her heart things altered slightly with each run through the course. Save them first, she thought. You have a bit more time. Be careful to not go over the edge if the railing breaks again. She went to the nearest post, set her hands behind the bowling ball sphere at its top, planted her feet on the railing, and push-pulled with all she had. Feeling it move, she rocked the post back and forth. It broke quicker than last time. Well, the railing did. The post still stood there, but that didn't matter. Parts of the railing flew over the edge. Other chunks skittered across the smooth marble floor, crashing into the wall-like pillar across the way. Sharon quickly got up and ran to a piece of stone about the size of a football. She would save her mother this time. She was certain. Ahead, she saw the dividing line where the wall blended from marble to glass. She slowed down and, only a foot or so away from it, came to a complete stop. This was perhaps one of the few times that being left-handed worked to her advantage. Using her hips for power, she twisted back, gripped the stone, and hocked it hard. When her hand was just over shoulder height, the stone's true weight came alive and Sharon's arms stung. The stone sailed through the air, and with a low woomph, landed against the window and shattered a hole about 3 feet around. The tall man in blue jumpsuit glared at her. Her mother jumped back at the glass, slid across the ground, and gathered around those gaudy gray sneakers she always wore. "Mom, run!" Sharon shouted. Her mother froze. Any moment, the short man in red would come in. Setting fear aside, Sharon dove at the jagged hole she created. Spikes of glass tore at her shirt and pants, blood dampening her skin. Other pieces of the serrated hole broke, widening it, a few shards sticking out to her skin. It didn't hurt as bad as she thought it would, but as she got to her feet, the skin on her thighs and arms stretched as they extended and hot slices of pain danced along the leaky slashes. The short man in the red jumpsuit came into the room, gun ready. The taller man in blue lunged for Sharon's mother. Moving quickly, Sharon grabbed her mom by the shoulders, spun her away from the taller man, and, with a grunt, pushed her toward the hole in the window. Arms flung out wide, head bowed forward, her mom landed against the glass back first, shattering the remainder of it as she fell through. "Go, Mom, go!" Sharon shouted, tears streaming down her bloody face. Her mother lay there, groaning, rotating her hips slowly from side to side, as if something inside was broken. A blue-sleeved arm wrapped around Sharon's neck, pressed downward and forced her to her knees. She grabbed at the forearm that squished her windpipe. Its grip would not loosen. The shorter fella rounded in front of her, squatted down, and held the gun to her head. Straining to look to her right to see if her mom was okay, Sharon's heart filled with relief when she saw the place where her mother lay had just moments before was empty. She must have... Her thoughts were cut short when the man in the red jumpsuit cocked the trigger. The other man squeezed her throat harder. "If he breaks my neck, so be it," she thought. But, jerking herself forward, she reached for the gun. What felt like a golf ball-sized rock slammed into her windpipe. When the man in red pulled away, he lost his balance and fell backward. Sharon grabbed the gun and fired one slug into him. Another blue arm came around on her left, the man's bony hand going for the gun. Leaning to the left, she brought the gun over to her right shoulder and forced the barrel against the right side of the man's chest. The blue arm on her left dropped the moment she pulled the trigger, warm blood splashing the back of her neck. Her father was next. If she saved him, she would be free. "Come on, Dad, hang in there," she thought. He had to. She was tired of running around in circles, lost to some repetitive obstacle course that, for all she knew, didn't have an end. Even now, after her recent victories, she toyed with the idea of quitting and, when the cycle started over again, bow at Aunt Clara's feet and hope for a bullet to the head. Yet the cycle would still probably renew itself. But if there is a way out... She also wondered how she got herself mixed up in this strange sequence of events to begin with. There was no place she knew of that had a tower with a rotating floor around it, a spinning room, with purple and gray clouds consistently storming above, clouds so vast and dense that they were everything and all, no sign of a world below. Similar to how her aunt's white dress had earlier, the tattered ends of the figures in black cloaks peeked out from around the curve far ahead, blowing in a wind that Sharon couldn't feel at her present point along the wall. Digging her heels into the floor, she charged ahead, and when she came to where her father should be defending himself against the figure in black, he instead lay in a pool of blood at the figure's feet, the hem of the black cloak drenched in wet, dark crimson. The figure in black raised its arm, a gun protruding slowly from its sleeve. A loud bang shook her from within. She had done this more than 5 or 6 times now. Maybe it was 8 or 9. A wave of nausea swept through Sharon's stomach and intestines even before she started running. There had to be a way to save time. Avoiding Aunt Clara, helping her mom, then getting her dad. Too many precious moments wasted. If I could get to him first, then maybe... She turned and ran the other way, not sure how far she had to go before she'd be forced to start all over again. and Clara would be last. If it isn't a super long run to Dad, then maybe... There was no telling how big the disc that encircled the gigantic marble pillar was. For all she knew, her aunt, her parents, and their assailants were only at the beginning of the circle. There was no set concept of time here. Moments sped, moments slowed. Time was not steady like in the outside world. She played over her run from the previous 6, 7, 10 times she tried to save her parents. She'd been so preoccupied with surviving and saving their lives, it was hard to tell how many minutes passed between each encounter. She glanced at her wrist. No watch. Figures, she thought. It was weird running out with the wall on her left instead of her right this time. More than once, she noticed herself drifting off course toward the railing, her right hand needing something solid beside it. As with the previous time she'd done this, sharp, zigzagging lightning crackled in the sky and thunder boomed low and full. Out of habit, she prepared herself for Aunt Clara's attack. A wonderful relief followed when she reminded herself that Aunt Clara would not be showing up this time, at least not until later. She checked over her shoulder for Clara, just in case. The sound of wet cloth slapping polished stone came from up ahead. No, not yet, not ever. Dad! Sharon's heart kicked up at speed. Tendrils of black material snaked out from around the curve in the wall. Sharon ran faster. The thick ribbons of dark fabric swam through the air in smooth waves, flowing inwards to a large figure in a black cloak. Sharon could not see its face. Around 20 feet away, she stopped, still beneath the figure's notice. She couldn't be 100% sure, but the being in the huge black cloak seemed bigger. It might have seemed that way because she had previously come in from the other side, but yet the more she thought of it, the more she was certain the figure had grown since last time. If it doesn't want me to pass, that's why it's bigger, she assumed. She didn't know what she needed to do first. Try and get her father out of the way, then face the cloaked figure, or go after the figure first, then help her father escape. Maybe Dad could help me save Mama if he survived this, she thought. Charging toward the figure, arms out, she grabbed hold of the cloak's thick, prickly fabric. The dark abyss of its face turned her away, the sheer blackness of its gaze she felt instead of saw. Eyeless wonder pierced her through and through. She stumbled back, pulling the black cloak with her. Her father shouted something, but she couldn't hear him from beneath the figure's cloak. The material was dense, like a heavy sponge or carpet. It smelled of poison mushrooms and rotting wood. Click-clack, thock. Click-clack, thock. The creature's steps were like horse hooves on a cobbled street, but with more weight behind them, more force. Click-clack, thock. Hands shaking, she slowly pushed the heavy material off her face, eyes squeezed shut. You must face him, it, whatever it is, you have to. Dad's gonna die, and even if you save Mom and avoid Aunt Clara, you're gonna have to do this all over again. Face the stupid thing, man, thing, again. Gah! Her thoughts were too loud for comfort. Sharon's eyes opened to a gray bone skeleton, the bones as thick as a pair of flesh-covered arms or legs. Behind the figure's ribcage, a heartbeat emits a mess of stringy veins, muscle, and fat, appearing more like red spider webs thatched to the bone, crisscrossing from rib to rib, covering them like something out of an anatomy book. She had been right about the hooves. At the bottom of the creature's shin bones, dirty gray hooves were cracked down the center, giving the impression of toes. The creature's fingers ran off jointed wrists like gangly branches off a tree. Its heart caught her attention again. It was vibrant red. Wiry veins snaked upward and coiled around vertebrae that appeared broken or cracked in a few places. Sharon expected the creature's head to be a skull. Instead, the black abyss was still there, no longer the once-thought endless shadow created by the creature's large hood. The black nothingness was oval-like, the same as a person's head. Looking closer, she saw there was a skull of a kind, the back portion of one, cranial cavity that was from about the middle of the creature's forehead, running up and over and down the back, connecting to the vertebrae with stringy veins. Lightning flashed as the creature neared her, a soft, echoey moan coming from a mouth as she could not see. The lightning lit up its face for a moment, and, for the briefest of instances, a pale, dead face appeared beneath the murky darkness. The creature grabbed her and moaned again. She shrieked as she was hoisted up. "Hey!" her father shouted behind her. She strained to look over her shoulder. He stood on top of the heap of discarded cloak, holding the creature's rifle. "Put my girl down," he said, and cocked the gun. Click-clack, thunk. The creature took one step forward, its long, bony fingers tightening around Sharon's neck, each finger a spike that felt as if it was being forced through her windpipe. Tears leaked from her eyes, and fluid filled her nose, giving her a headache. In a swirl of darkness, the creature's cloak took on a life of its own, wrapping itself around her father, covering him up from his armpits. His arms were still free. So was the gun. The extra fabric around his feet like a puddle slowly slid toward her. Her father took aim. In an ear-splitting shriek, like a thousand children screaming, the creature threw Sharon off to the side. She slid across the floor and crashed hard against the railing. Something crunched in her lower back, and a burst of aching pain flared up in her tailbone. The creature had her father's wrists in one skeletal hand, its other moving toward the gun. "Sharon, here!" her dad shouted and flicked his wrist forward. The rifle hit the ground, butt end first, and a yellow flash sparked from the end of the barrel as it went off. The creature, keeping watch on the gun, twisted its torso into a powerful jerk, the living cloak throwing her father against the wall. He lay there, his limbs twisted as if his arms and legs had been broken. Each movement excruciating, Sharon forced herself toward the gun, her fingers clawing the floor as she pulled her body along. The pain in her lower back forbade her to stand. The dark cloak rose up like a tornado and covered the skeletal creature, forming its master like a food wrap in a dish. A blur of black darted toward her, and a chunk of the cloak knocked her back. Dazed, she tried to remember where she was and what she had been trying to do. The gun. "Dad! Get away, you freak!" she yelled, emptying her lungs. Adrenaline pumping, she frantically pulled herself along the floor. The creature's cloak shot out again, the tips of thick fabric whipping a fiery slash across her shoulder blades. She heard her t-shirt, a green one now, tear. The sudden wetness of blood from at least three slashes dampened the fabric and the skin beneath. Wincing, setting the fiery pain aside, she forced herself to move quickly. Anger and murderous rage ran through her. In a burst of energy, her legs came alive, and though she could not stand, she used her knees to help her along the floor. The moment her fingertips touched the warm barrel of the rifle, the creature threw its cloak out once more, the fabric wrapping around the rifle's butt end. The fabric, like a hand, yanked backward. She hung on. It snapped its cloak back a second time, dragged her forward, her fingers clamping on the rifle. Her kneecaps felt as though they were going to pop off as she tried to bend her legs. Painfully, she managed to get her legs under her, squatting as she struggled to maintain her grip on the gun. The creature pulled. Sharon slid along the floor, the soles of her feet burning as her skin skidded on marble. It was only then she realized she wasn't wearing any shoes. The moment she felt the creature's pull ease some, she yanked the barrel as hard as she could and, her knees now at an angle, got her feet beneath her and pressed backward against the floor as hard as she could. She fell, her tailbone smashing a second time from her weight. The rifle landed on an angle and whacked her in the shoulder where it was more bone than flesh. Wasting no time as the creature moved toward her, Sharon cocked the rifle and pulled the trigger. Her father was still out when she checked on him right after the creature fell. She was surprised she killed it. The bullet disappeared into the black deep of its face and, like smoke sucked into a fan, the black nothingness funneled inward toward the back of its skull. It dropped dead, and all that was left of its face was the lower half of a head, the top now missing thanks to the bullet and thin lips. Pus-filled sores dotted the powdery gray skin. The rifle in his hands dissolved into thin air as if the creature's demise triggered its own. Her dad was unconscious. She rearranged his limbs so he was in a more comfortable position, and he hoped he'd be safe. It was only after she did that she realized she didn't had him moved him, if indeed his limbs had been broken. I'm so sorry, Dad. There weren't any other threats roaming the spinning room that she knew of, any that had been directed specifically their way, at least. Mom, the thought was like a hot needle driven into her brain. keeping her guard up, her sense of awareness in a heightened state. She charged alongside the wall, racing to save her mother. She had time. The distance, from what she could remember, between Aunt Clara and her mother was a long one. Between her father and her mother, it was shorter. Those few extra minutes could be enough to finally get her into her in time. A few moments later, no more than a couple feet away, there was a ridge in the wall she hadn't noticed before. The ridge ran the wall's height, nearly blending completely into its counterpart that was an inch higher. If you turned your head on its side, as it was an inch or so in thickness, she checked the wall, and it was smooth. Suddenly captivated by its polished surface. Can't stop to look at this. No time, she thought. She broke back into a run. Her fingers were still on the ridge in the wall and had pushed against it. The wall slid forward like a gigantic drawer. She went in. The hallway inside was painted a dull light blue, the paint's finish marred by scratches and dirty fingers. The hallway ran to the right, the same way she was headed. It did not extend to the left. Small, dim lamps lit the hallway, but not nearly enough to be called bright or just right. The floor was tiled in that grungy grayish beige that reminded her of elementary school. Sharon took a few steps in. Up ahead on the right, a shadow ran floor to ceiling. A room, perhaps? The markings and smudges on the wall remained consistent as she ran toward the room. Mom's in there, she thought with conviction. The room was where the large rectangular window would be if she was outside. If all occurred as before, and she had no reason to believe that it wouldn't, of her attempted rescues there had been no alterations to her mother's, unlike her dad who had been killed in a difficult manner, each time by the cloaked skeleton man. Then the tall man in blue would have his back to her, a gun on her mom. If her mother didn't see her sneak in or didn't display any form of change in her facial expression or body language, indicating she was aware of her daughter's presence, that was. She slowed to a brisk walk. Her feet trotting along the tiled floor made too much noise. Back against the wall, she peered inside the room. The man in the blue suit, Blue, she called him once before, yelled at her mom in a language she didn't understand, all spits and garbles in a dialect that sounded something like Pig-Latin. If I had just had a rock or something to throw at him or break the window with, she thought. There was nothing except for an empty hallway. The guy in red would be along soon. He'd have his weapon with him, but she wasn't sure if she could wrestle it free from him without getting killed. She wasn't wearing shoes, or so even throwing those at him was impossible. Time was running out. Sharon gathered her courage and entered the room. Holding her breath, keeping silent, she heel-toed toward the man as slow as she was able, unsure whether Mom had seen her or not. Please don't say anything. Please don't look at me. Keep watching him, Mom. Don't throw him off. The toes on her right foot rolled under her, pulling her instep along with them. Quickly recovering her balance, she cursed herself when Blue turned around. Moving swiftly, she grabbed the gun with both hands, tugging with jerky pulls, trying to free it from Blue's steel-like grip. Hotch Ray Ois Wangzish, he said. Sharon, her mom called. She hesitated for a moment and said, I'll get help. Mom, don't! Putting her shoulder into the man's sternum, Sharon twisted his arms to the front of her body, putting them into some kind of lock. Another guy's coming. He's in red. Blue's foot hooked around her ankle from behind, locking in just above it. He pulled forward. She toppled onto him. The man's bony fingers and the hard metal handle of the gun stabbed her gut on impact. The air shot out of her in a short wheeze, a sudden pang of sharp pain plowing into her ribs. It didn't take a chiropractor to know something was out of place. Sharon, her mother screamed. Ivich tish osh ems. He pressed into her, his fingers squirming beneath her, trying to get a better grip on the pistol. Forcing her way downward to forbid any further movement, she caught a glimpse of her mother coming toward them. Mom! Help! The guy! Watching! Red! Coming! Her air was gone and there was too much weight being pressed into her ribcage to inhale. His lips to Sharon's ear, Blue grunted and something snapped like a pencil. The man's body went limp and the two dropped to the floor. Rolling the two over as far as able, giving her some breathing room, her mother said, "Sharon, did you... are you... come here." She helped her off the floor. "Go slow," Sharon said. Having the corpse's weight lifted from her was both relieving and painful. The gun's curved handle had been pressed so tight into her solar plexus it had nearly made a home there. "Mom." Sharon's voice was barely a whisper. Her mother embraced her. Blue's corpse lay there, his eyes still open, staring at them. "What did you do?" Sharon asked. "Kicked him. Meant to get him in the jaw, but I think I missed. I guess kicked too hard because his head shot back at an odd angle and his neck bent outward in front. Broken." She squeezed Sharon tighter. "I don't care. He would have killed you." The short fellow in the red suit, Red, entered the room, rifle drawn. Without word or confirmation that his comrade was dead, he cocked the gun, brought it eye level, and stared down the barrel. A loud popping crack echoed throughout the room. The rifle flew from his hands, his first two fingers nothing more than bleeding, fleshy stumps, a gush of red spewing out their ends. "Now!" Sharon grabbed her mom by the hand and reloaded the pistol's firing chamber. She fired. The window leading outside shattered, fell, and the two escaped. The anguished howling of the man in the red suit followed them. "Aunt Clara's just around the corner," Sharon said. "She's got a gun, too, and she's trying to kill me." "Was trying to kill me." "Ah, never mind. What does Clara have to do with... what?" "Just like what I said was..." "Never mind. If Aunt Clara gets Mom, I'd have to start over again, wouldn't I?" No way. This is the last time, she thought. Enough repetition. The thought of running in circles again made her head and stomach swim. The thought of being in that place at the beginning of the... challenge? Never again. The sores on her feet. She shuddered to think of the hard, pus-filled, yellowy-orange bumps on the balls of her feet and heels. But her body renewed itself with each cycle, didn't it? The bullet wound from Aunt Clara's gun was no longer present on her shoulder. It doesn't matter, she thought. It'll all be over soon. The pain-filled howls began to fade and was soon lost behind them. Yet when Sharon looked over on her shoulder, she saw a speck of red in the distance. Extending her right arm behind her, Sharon motioned for her mother to keep back. "How far do we have to go?" her mom asked. "Shouldn't be too much farther, I don't think," she said. And Aunt Clara, what could she say? That her mom's sister was waiting around the corner with a gun? Aunt Clara? "I have to tell her. She's going to see her soon enough anyway," Sharon thought. "She's up ahead, Mom. She's got a gun and she's going to try and kill me. You too, maybe." "What are you talking about?" Her mother came in to abrupt halt, hands on hips. "I am not impressed." Sharon slowed, turned around, and walked over to her. "It's true. I don't know why she's so upset or what happened that she's bent on killing me more times than I can count." She put her hands on her mother's shoulders. "We have to get past her." Her mother's glare had the infamous look of, "Sharon, you did something wrong again. I'm disappointed in you, young lady." "Look, Mom, we have to keep moving. We can talk about this after, okay?" In the distance, the speck of red was larger, now a red and tan blur of the man in the jumpsuit. "No, we have to talk about this now." The fellow picked up speed. In a few minutes, he'll have caught up to them. "Crap! Look, I'm going ahead. You could stay here if you wa-" But she needed her mom, didn't she? If her mom got killed, she'd have to do this all over again. It ended now, even if she had to kill Clara in front of her mother, if only to end this. If she had to repeat running around trying to save her parents again, she'd do away with herself and hope that by doing so would end the cycle once and for all. But, it seemed, she had an equally good chance the cycle would begin anew anyway, and she'd forever be held prisoner to the hands of repetitive time. Her mother's eyes were still fixated on hers. "Turn around and you'll see that guy who almost killed you, Mom. You can stay here and wait for him, or you can come with me and have a chance of getting out of here alive. It's up to you," Sharon said. Mouthing the words, "I love you," she turned and jogged toward Aunt Clara's gun, soon to show at any moment. Her neck ached to turn and look back to see if her mom was going to follow or not. "Show her you're serious and she'll follow," she thought. "I will not look back." "Come on, Mom, let's go. Put your pride aside for once. You don't always need to have the last word, Sharon muttered to herself, then added in a whisper, Can't leave her here. She glanced over her shoulder and was relieved when she saw her mom running behind her. She slowed down just enough for her to catch up before they continued on at full speed. Less than a minute later, the stark white of Aunt Clara's dress appeared up ahead. Maybe she won't take a shot at me since Mom's here, Sharon thought. Mom could talk to her, right? Find out what the heck's going on? Doing her best to keep the sound of her footfalls to a minimum, she warned her mom to be ready to split up and for her mom to stay near the wall while she ran toward the railing in the hopes of distracting Clara long enough for her to get away. If she has a gun, I'm going to talk to her, her mother said. No, you can't. She might kill you. She's not going to. Yes, she will. Sharon didn't mean to scream, but couldn't control the suppressed frustration any longer. Behind them, Red gained even more ground, and quickly. The white dress up ahead moved and was gone for a moment before returning to view. Clara must have heard them because she was moving toward them like a ghost, her feet gliding along the ground rather than stepping. Okay, Mom, get ready, Sharon said. There's a guy following us, she said, seemingly surprised. Of course there is. He's going to kill you if Aunt Clara doesn't. Come on, she eyed the railing. Okay, here's the plan. But you already told me what you're going to do. I know, but forget that. I have a better idea. Listen. After sharing her plan, the two headed toward the railing. At first they kept in line with each other, Sharon in the lead. Aunt Clara moved toward them. Splitting up, Sharon and her mother ran opposite each other near the far, crisscrossing in a figure-eight-like pattern. Clara moved first toward Sharon, then Sharon to Sharon's mother. Smoothly, Clara's baggy white sleeve moved upward, the black metallic pistols peeking out from the loose-fitting cuff. Letting her aunt get closer, Sharon kept to her zigzagging pattern. Her mother did the same. Suddenly, Sharon stopped and, as planned, her mother ran past her far ahead. When Clara kept moving towards Sharon, her mother stopped along the railing and crossed over to the wall before running back. To the left, Red charged toward them. She'd almost forgotten about him. At first, it wasn't clear who he'd attack first, Sharon or her mother, but his intentions were made obvious when he pushed off the wall and cut in at an angle, heading toward her. Sharon wished they had taken Blue's pistol with them for protection. Neither of them had been thinking. The man in the red jumpsuit and Aunt Clara closed in. Sharon stopped, gathered her breath, and did her best not to panic. Her mother was still a good 20 or so feet away. Not too close, but not too far either. Sharon ran toward Red. Clara immediately adjusted her course. The crackling of lightning and the boom of thunder drowned out all sound. She couldn't hear herself breathe. The man in red sped up his charge. Sharon stopped in front of him and prepared for impact. Within an instant, he had his arms around her, bringing her to the ground. The back of her head smacked hard against the stone flooring. Bursts of red, white, and black grew to fuzzy stars before her eyes. The stars quickly blinked out in a flash of white when the man's bony fist landed between her eyes. Pain shot from somewhere in front, through her head, into somewhere far behind. Thunder crashed. She wasn't sure if the next flash of light was the lightning or another blow. All she cared about was the annoying buzzing in her ears and if it would stop. Sharon, her mother's voice was faint, coming from far away. White fabric flowed along the floor over to the right. Lightning flared up on all sides. Aunt Clara's white dress was gone. Red's fist came crashing down again. Thunder crashed like a shot from a gun. Soft leather wrapped around Sharon's feet, and something harder rose beneath her soles. She couldn't see anything in the syrupy darkness around her. Shoes? Her shaking hands held tightly to iron railings on either side as she made her way toward the white slit up ahead. The bright, thin bar of light was ground level, and with each step forward, the bar grew to the outline of a door. The sound of her shoes clunking along a metallic grate was foreign. She expected to hear skin on marble, slapping down with each footfall. Knees aching, she had to stop to rest and was surprised that it took a few minutes to catch her breath. I'm never going to try this again, she thought. I don't know why I talked myself into it. The guy by the door was clearly a freak. She couldn't remember the fellow's name, but only a face, skull-like with a clown's smile and a floppy orange hat with a bushy yellow feather sticking out of the headband. Keeping one hand on the rail, she set the other out in front of her, pawing at the air, searching for the door. Once she found it, she felt along its bumpy metal surface for a handle. It was about waist height, right side, like a van door. She had jiggled it first to see which way it was supposed to turn, then pressed it all the way down, moving the handle from a horizontal to a vertical position. The latch clicked with a ka-clink. She pulled the door open and was blinded by yellow light. Instinctively, her hand went to her eyes, shielding them from the sun straight ahead. The railing and walkway continued from the door and wound down 6 feet before bending into the cracked, weathered concrete outside. Eyes slowly adjusting, she made her way down the ramp, the heat already causing her to sweat. "What the?" she started. There really wasn't a word to describe it. She was in a compound of some sort, an old fairground. A rusted, long-forgotten Ferris wheel lay on its side some 15 feet away, sand having blown in from the surrounding desert covering most of the crisscrossing bars at the bottom. At the far corner of the chain-link fenced-in area, a wooden roller coaster sat devoid of life, the white paint peeling the old and new away, the absence of a roller coaster car putting finality to what the coaster once stood for. An orange circus-like tent stood in the middle of the fairground, three of its posts still standing, one of the corners having collapsed inward, who knew when. As Sharon's eyes adjusted, more of the fairground became clear. She eyed the ramp she'd just been on, following its path up to the long white trailer she had just come out of. Plastered along the trailer's side in faded paint was the words, "Spinning Room," and below that, "A Horror House Made for You." The sign's red and blue lettering, lightened to a pink and pale blue with age, brought back memories of what happened the night she came to the fair. It had been Halloween, 16 years old, her parents in their mid-40s. She had wanted to go into the spinning room, the man with the face paint telling her that once she went in, there was no coming out, and if you did manage to escape, it would still take you a lifetime to do so. Of course, she didn't believe him. She handed the guy her ticket and she began running. How long has it been? She wondered. She moved to wipe her eyes and cried out when she saw her hands. Her fingertips were like raisins, the skin on her palms thin and paper-like. "Oh, no! What happened?" she said. Her breath caught in her throat at the sound of her own voice. It wasn't hers. It was no longer smooth and feminine, the kind of voice that drove the boys wild at school. She was speaking more from the back of her throat than up front by her tongue. Her voice reminded her of her grandmother's. Misty-eyed, Sharon roamed the fairground for nearly an hour, stepping past old snack sheds and outhouses, a dried-up wading pool, a merry-go-round with small ceramic ponies with big teeth and wide grins. Some of their eyes were missing, lost somewhere to the ages. The funhouse mirrors were all broken save one, the kind that made you look short and fat. Sharon took a good look at herself in the dirty, scratched-up surface, past the intended distortions into the woman staring back at her. Her hair was white, almost ankle-length, brittle-looking, and hanging over long, heavy breasts that appeared more like half-empty hot water bottles than the smooth, firm breasts she was used to. Fine, wrinkly lines dented her skin, cheeks, arms, hands, everything. Legs giving way beneath her, she fell and screamed when her old bones landed hard against the wood slat at the mirror's base. She stayed there for a long time, while she finally gathered the strength to stand. A hard wind blew sand and litter at her feet. A yellowed piece of paper crinkled and ripped, caught her eye. It was her, at least, it was her, how she looked when she was 16. Beneath her smiling face was one word, missing.
Well, welcome back to the story behind the story part of this podcast. That story was a long one, wasn't it? Yes, it was. It was a long one. And the reason it was a long one is because it was based on a dream. It actually, like, for some reason, this particular dream, I was in, like, that spinning room scenario. I was Sharon. I was encountering the guy in the blue and the guy in the red and the death-looking guy and everything. And someone was trying to get me, and I kept going in circles and circles. And
the cycle, it would be like a cycle, like as per the story, like it would be reset itself, and then I knew what would happen again, and I would try to change something, and then, you know, to try to get out of that situation, because in those types of dreams, you know, you feel trapped, right? You feel like it's real and stuck, and you're stuck in the circumstance. So, like, I would try to change something to get out of it, and it would partly work, and then I'd hit, like, another obstacle, and then, of course, I would lose, and then the dream would start over again, and then I'd be doing the same thing again. I was going around, and knowing what to expect, so then I would avoid that, and then remembering what the next thing was to try to avoid, and sometimes it was successful, sometimes not. And eventually it was that whole thing of progressing, like, through the dream of, like, remembering, slowly but surely remembering, okay, this sequence happens, and this, and this, and this, and if I just manipulate this, this, and this, I can get out of it, you know? And we've all had dreams like that, right? But what made the story hard to write was, and I didn't even know how it came across in this podcast, to be honest, because the thing with dreams, right, as we all know, is they're, for the most part, not coherent, right? They're not 100% linear. You know, sometimes, yes, we have those, you know, in-depth dreams where everything does make sense and everything does flow sort of along a true path of time, so to speak. But for the most part, dreams are fragmented, right? And so writing the story, I had to, one, like, I, you know, recalling the events of my dream was easy. It was very fresh, and it, for some reason, stayed fresh in my head. So that part was easy. But the idea was, like, resetting the cycle over again, and trying not to confuse the reader. So again, so I'm not sure how it came across in this episode of story time, because I can understand if it got a little bit confusing, because dreams can be confusing. But I hope I did pull it off. I hope I did entertain you with you got the point that it, okay, at first, okay, maybe it didn't quite make sense, but then you realized, okay, she's going through this cycle over and over and over again. And then that kind of puts things together and puts things in context and explains why Sharon did the actions that she did, right? And why she changed things here and there as she did. So I hope all that made sense. But the point is, it was based on a dream, and that's the story behind the story. It was based on a dream that just remained in my head, and I just kept thinking about it over and over and over again for some reason. And I just thought, you know what, this would make a good story. And I wrote it. And when I wrote it too, the last thing is, I found, it was a long, short story, as we just experienced. Like, it turned out, like, I was expecting maybe 4,000 or 5,000 words, your standard short story length. And I think this sucker came out like 7 or 8. Like, it's much longer compared to, regular short stories. Anyway, yeah, that's the story behind the story. Based on a dream, me exercising my demons, getting it out of my system, and now sharing it with you. So, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Story Time. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope to see you next episode. We have another one coming up, and I think it's going to be maybe episode 5, maybe episode 6, we're going to do a superhero episode. But until then, yeah, we got another horror one coming up, and please join us. So don't forget to subscribe to the channel, and just support us by being part of this, leaving comments, and liking and sharing, and just helping us all out. Anyway, thanks for everything. See you next episode. Thanks for sticking around after the credits for this little short little segment. And I don't know how you check out this podcast. I don't know if you're listening to it through Spotify, or if you're on YouTube Music, or if you're directly at my website, or if you're doing the watch listen version on YouTube. But no matter how you're taking in this podcast, I just want to say thank you. Thank you. And I ask that you just keep coming back. You know, some stories you're going to hit, some stories you might miss, but either way, you're going to get a story. So I just want to say thanks for tuning in. And thanks for joining me on this third episode of season 2 of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters Storytime Podcast with AP Fuchs. Please subscribe. That helps support it in whatever platform, you know, Spotify, YouTube Music, YouTube Regular, whatever. That does help support the show. It does help keep the show sort of backboned, so to speak, so that I can keep doing it. And all it takes is a little click. So thank you again for tuning in. Much appreciated. And I hope you enjoy next week's episode, because we'll be there next week. I'll see you then, or you'll see me if you're doing the YouTube watch version. Either way, thanks. Cheers.